So welcome to the month zero for Investival ETR briefing that covers the trading period from the 1st of April to the 30th of April. As the briefing document explains, exchange-traded receivables are leases, monetary obligations, or bills that are issued under contract for assets, goods, and/or services that are supplied to investment-quality companies or credit-insured invoices from investment-grade insurers. What that means is that an ETR is evidence of a debt owing from one company to another, and typically these tend to be large companies or banks that are household names, and they owe money to their smaller micro to medium-sized suppliers. So we call those micro to medium-sized supplier businesses originators because they originate the debt obligation transactions that create the ETR that are traded on the exchange. The ETR is evidence of the large company's liability to pay the smaller one, and credit exchange buys these ETR at a nominal discount to their face value. And it's that nominal discount to the face value, nominal discount to the face value, that when the ETR are settled and paid in full, the difference between that face value that is settled and the discounted price that it was purchased at creates the margin. And that's the margin that creates yield for investors. So credit exchange also provides other credit facilities for just different types of transactions such as trade finance, asset finance, and others. Essentially, they all work the same way, have the same principles, that the traded ETR is a business transaction. The exchange provides liquidity and is paid a commission for doing so, much in the same way a bank charges interest. Last month, I spoke about inflation, and unfortunately, it looks like it's got its foothold and seems to be digging in. I do remember being a young fellow back in the 70s when even in one of the smallest villages in Ireland, we knew the name OPEC. The fuel shortages had every pump in Ireland with queues around the corner. And back then, we also had serious inflation and stagnation. And if you look at where we are today, it has the potential, although I hope not, to end up looking a little bit like the 70s all over again. In reading an article from Nicola Goodkind from CNN Business, she is confirming our concerns in her article where she examines the different types of recession and recovery, particularly where they are inflation-induced. And as she puts it, this can sometimes lead to that D word, as we're, are we looking at a depression? I certainly don't think so, but I think we could potentially be in for a long and difficult few years ahead. Whether it's economists or CEOs, Main Street, Wall Street, all those names, they all mostly agree that a recession has started or we're on the verge of one, and it's certainly taking shape in the U.S. And the question is, what shape this recession might take? So recessions and recoveries come in many shapes. And over the years, economists have come to name them with different letters like K, L, V, W, and so on. And predicting which letter matches the situation is not an easy task. So this recession that we think we're looking at is unprecedented, and that adds to the complication. Whether it's supply chain squeezes, the shipping boom where prices have trebled, if not quadrupled, COVID that still has Asia in lockdown, or the war in Ukraine, aggressive plans at the same time to combat global warming, coupled with fuel and energy prices rocketing to levels never seen before, and at the same time, commodity prices in multiple sectors doing the same. So if you're not experiencing the negative effect of one of these, you're experiencing multiple effects. Unbelievably, in the face of certain recession, The workforce remains, as we've just heard in the discussion at the start of this briefing, the workforce remains as complacent as they are evasive. Looking for staff in Northern Europe is beyond challenging. It seems people no longer want to work. And God knows where they're getting their money from, but it seems the majority of people are more concerned with the quality of life and the work-life balance that to someone like me is quite difficult to understand. In the age of information, there's a disconnect that's baffling. I know what a deep and prolonged recession looks like. The devastation of a generation like we had back in the 80s, where tens of thousands of Irish left for the UK and the US with little more than a few hundred pounds in their pocket. Many of those never returned. And here we are 40 years later, looking at something that hopefully doesn't happen. But if it does, you can't hire staff in Ireland or in the UK at the moment. Quoting a chap called Nick Tell, the CEO of investment bank Armory Group, he says the psychological impact on the workforce from COVID and the enormous amounts of subsidies that were introduced into the economy has led to a labor shortage that hasn't been seen outside of wartime recession. And Nick thinks we're going to have a U-shaped recession and recovery, which is one we haven't seen in a very long time. A U-shaped recession signals a deep decline with a bit of a long struggle at the bottom before the economy recovers. These are painful recessions that last a long time and are caused by a number of coinciding factors. This recession, with its stagflation and oil and energy crisis, combined with the EU slow to show and overall general mismanagement that we see time and again from the ECB, this is has a very real possibility of repeating the dark days of 73 to 75, where the Federal Reserve was adopting the same stop and go responses and caused a long and withdrawn out recession before it made the U-shaped recovery. If this happens, the economy will slow down until the workforce and unemployment reach a balance, and I'm not referring to a work-life balance either. I mean where supply balances with demand and productivity rises, bringing the unemployed back into the workforce. So I agree with Tell, but not on a pan-European or global basis. And before explaining this, just want very quickly to cover off the other two types of recession. So the V-shaped recession is just what it sounds like, a sharp decline, a clear bottom, and then a sharp incline. This type of quick and complete recovery is considered a best case scenario when it comes to a recession. These usually represent a recovery from recession based on a single event shock, like, for example, the COVID 2020 recession. David Leibowitz, a global market strategist at JP Morgan Asset Management, like everyone else, hoped that if there is a recession, it will be V-shaped and only last a few quarters. He says that one of the things they always look for and try to gauge is some sort of imbalance. There was an imbalance in equity valuations during the tech bubble and an imbalance in housing in the run-up to the financial crisis of 2008. But looking at the economy today, he says they don't see any significant imbalances that would lead to a serious downturn in the economy. So the next recession, he believes, will be mild, but I disagree. We're probably looking at either a U or a W-shaped recession. While the 2020 pandemic recession and recovery was V-shaped, many who worked in the white-collar jobs recovered quickly as the government handed out stimulus payments. As a result, stocks and property prices appreciated. Those without savings who work in service industries continue to suffer, and employees receiving the lowest wages were the most likely to lose their jobs in nearly every sector of the economy between 2020 and 2021. So the lowest average wage establishments and the lowest earning workers have borne the brunt of COVID. Therefore, the lowest wage establishments and the lowest wage workers both saw the steepest initial declines in employment at the start of the recession and experienced the slowest subsequent recovery in employment. So a V-shaped recession can lead to a W-shaped recession. And this occurs when the economy moves beyond a recession into recovery and then falls right back into another recession. So a W-shaped recovery is particularly painful to investors who jump back into what they believe to be a recovered market before plummeting to another bottom. In the 1980s, the US economy had a short 6-month recession, a recovery, and then followed by a downturn that lasted several years. So like the ECB, if the Federal Reserve isn't aggressive enough in raising interest rates, this is very possibly what's going to happen again. Or are we looking at that L-shaped recession where there is a plunge in growth for a long time and ultimately we do end up in a depression? I think this is possible, but I don't think it's likely to happen. No, what we're looking at is probably a U-shaped recession, but not geographically or globally. It will be sector-based. By this, I mean we will see a slowdown in manufacturing and services that will affect a lot of people. But at the same time, there will be certain sectors that will either continue to experience a boom, or other sectors like livestock export or aggregates and mining, for example, that enter a strong and favorable market because they happen to be niche, all of which are obviously international markets and markets that we serve. From researching this online, the split market recession that I've just described, they call it a K-shaped recession recovery. I don't understand what the relevance of the K is, but what happens is separate communities or sectors recover from economic downturns at varying rates. Some sectors of society may experience renewed growth, while others continue to lag behind. As the research states, these changes are usually identified, or defined rather, by industrial, wealth, and geographical differences, and are exacerbated by increased rates of income and wealth inequality. Wealth inequality is becoming an increasing issue in the majority of the Western world and second world countries, as can be seen in the current situation in Sri Lanka. The issue of the wealth gap, like the situation in Sri Lanka, isn't going away anytime soon, but that's for others to discuss. As inflation is heading towards 10% in the UK, and in the EU, the current average is about 7%, but they'll be in their double digits soon too. If you couple that with the strengthening dollar-euro position, where the euro has been in steady decline for the past 12 months, before making gains in the last few weeks, one would hope that these gains are sustainable from a low of $1.05 to the euro. It is a long way to go to get back to where it was a year ago, at 1.21, 1.22. And for these and other reasons, we are and remain optimistic in our markets, but not in others. As explained in last month's briefing, double-digit negative effects in any market are devastating, particularly if they stay for any length of time. That's what we're thinking is going to happen. Lastly, on this gloomy outlook, rather than inflation, remember that inflation is good for finance and for providing the finance that credits do. So long as we take sectoral views, certainly for 2022 and 2023, our overall look should remain positive. And as most of our trades are outside of Ireland and even the UK, we have the latitude to be very selective in what we do and where we do it. If we are correct in that we are all facing a recession, all of your investors are looking at losing, as I said last month, about a 12th of their cash deposits values. So gains elsewhere won't be plentiful, In fact, they will be scarce. So we need to start thinking now about what to do in credit and indeed with your clients, and certainly be planning for the winter. So a little bit of planning ahead, I guess. Anyhow, to get back to the briefing document, where it states at the end of April, Credit Exchange held active RSA of 70.47 million, and this was about circa 7%, a 7% increase on March. As you all know, RSA stands for Revolving Sale Agreement, and a Revolving Sale Agreement is a document, a contract between the micro to medium-sized business, or the originator, and Credit Exchange. The Revolving Sale Agreement is a commitment by the originator to sell a certain value of ETR to the exchange in any given period. Typically, it's for 1 year. So the example I've been using of late, let's say an originator needs a trade credit facility of 1 million euro in order to run their business. They come to the credit group, much like they would a bank, and apply for that credit facility on a revolving basis every 60 days. This means that they must agree to sell 1 million worth of ETR every 60 days, and therefore the revolving sale agreement, or RSA, will be for 6 million worth of ETR over the course of the next year. This commitment to sell 6 million of ETR annually on the exchange is documented in the RSA with the credit group. Similarly, if we are looking at a leasing transaction where the originator wants to buy an asset for 5 million over 5 years, this would result in total payments over 60 months of approximately 6 million, meaning that each month for 60 months, the originator would pay credit 10,000 euro each month. Each one of these payments is an ETR, and collectively the total 6 million is part of the active revolving sale agreements we report on at these briefings each month. As stated, at the end of April, Credit Exchange held 77.5 million of these active RSA contracts on the 30th of April, and the active RSA contracts continue to remain short as trading patterns and the speed of settlements and the shortening of the cash-to-cash life cycle increases, with the ever-increasing use of trade and shipping costs or freight finance. Trade finance in its purest form, meaning that we support commodity trades and shipping-related transactions, is a core competency and principal activity on the trade desk. Moving to the next figure, there was 63.10 million of investor funds fully allocated. As you know, this means we have just over 63 million of investors' funds in the market. Add the 77.5 million of RSA, or revolving sale agreements, that represent future orders we have that are not yet filled. This amounts to just over 130 million in trade we have on our books for April, and this is an almost 10% increase on March. For 2022, this figure has continued to rise each month and shows strong and stable growth as we put more money into the market. Moving to investor redemptions or withdrawals, they hit another high of 3.42 million. And this seems to indicate we're in a completely new market now, where there are significant peaks and troughs, where since the beginning of the year, the gains 1 month are wiped out in the subsequent month before repeating the cycle again in the third month. As you all probably know, we've not experienced this before, and in taking a closer look, there isn't anything specific that jumps out at you. In short, we need to expedite our plans for raising additional debt or issuing securities. In this market, where we think it's heading, debt should be a better tool until we see some stability return in 2023 or 24. And at the last board meeting, the discussion was only about debt and securities were pushed to the side. Looking to the Baltic Index, which is the index against which most shipping contracts are linked, The index has had a turbulent first few months this year, hitting the low of 1,300 in January before getting an overall recovery that spiked and remained flat in April. And the spiking continues today at a new high this year of 3,400. Last month, I said it's unlikely we'd see the volatility and record-breaking levels like the 3,000 and even 5,000 in the Baltic during last year, but it seems my prediction was wrong. In fact, this is starting to look like a repeat if you go back to 2004. But like I said earlier, there's a lot of different factors in this market, so it's very hard to make any form of reliable predictions right now. The war in the Ukraine, like inflation and now recession, all together confirm my other earlier points, as does the FFA market that is ignoring these economic indicators and confirms the split between poor performing and strong performing sectors, because the FFA market continues its upward and positive view for 2022. So the FFA markets, as you may know, are the derivative financial futures that predict cargo transport prices ahead of time. And when you combine these with the Baltic Index, together they provide a pretty good indication of how the market's most likely to behave. So the Panamax 4TC FFA rates were at 20,000 in January, and since March have remained fairly stable before moving up to $26,000 and $27,000 per day since February. In 2022, it's looking and is displaying signs that the shipping industry is going to remain strong for 2022 and most likely 2023. So these circa 25,000 per day prices are in line with what we expected and predicted, and mean originators require more finance to move their charters and their vessels, pay bunkers and so on. And this will be a good year for credit also. Looking further into the 12 months of 2022, into 23, the rates are stable with a significant drop in 2024. But there's nothing to be read into that at this time because those prices were low last year too. Quickly looking at the market research from Seabourn, from their weekly shipping reports, they summarize important events that will impact markets and note that the antitrust bill in the US that is designed to put an end to any price fixing or cartels amongst OPEC members. Maybe that's a market indicator in itself. If you're hearing about OPEC in the news, things aren't good, or at the very least are about to disimprove. Last month, I spoke about the fact that a total of 45% of the total Russian coal exports go to the EU or the UK. Now we have grain shortages that are going to be exacerbated and multiplied by the war in the Ukraine, coupled with the national or federal ban on grain exports coming out of India. To top this off, it's claimed that Indonesia's palm oil export ban does not threaten the EU, according to a vegetable oil group called Fed Oil. How this is possible when Indonesia is the world's top palm oil producer, last week it imposed a ban on raw materials for cooking oil, including several products such as refined bleach and deodorized palm olein, or RBD as it's called, crude and refined palm oil, all in an attempt to lower the rising oil prices in palm oil exports. As with last month, all of these developments will feed into our market as we see more and more inquiries for dry bulk and indeed tanker vessels needing to move these products to market. Increasingly, commodity prices combined with increased demand means that these markets continue to require more of the funding and liquidity that we at the credit group provide. With the sector focus mentioned earlier, we continue to see strong underlying assets and trades with continued good and stable short to mid-term outlook. as this briefing is about April's trade, this month was a little bit disappointing because it was the first month to show a dip in trading. And I say dip because we're working hard to push that back to growth. So in March, we had 16.69 million in trade. And although April turned in a respective 11 million, it's still less than March. As you'll see from the performance section, although it may be a disappointing month, overall, we're still 50% higher for trade in April 2021, in 2022 than we were in 2021. Looking at treasury performance, as you'd expect, it lags behind at 8 million because its performance peaks from increased trading in the preceding 75 days. Speaking of which, and moving to the ETR average duration figure, it's 73 days, and it would seem to indicate the market has finally returned to the credit index average of 75. We haven't seen this number in more than 2 years, and hopefully, despite my earlier views in this briefing, hopefully it will remain. Volumes and values may come down, but having a stable credit index allows for better planning and management by the trade desk. As you know, the credit index is the ETR average duration or number of days it takes for an ETR to get settled. The credit index is the cash-to-cash cycle from the day an ETR is issued and purchased in cash and the number of days it takes for the debt to be extinguished or settled and the cash returned. At 73, it's now up to the trade desk to see if they can push it to new lows with more exposure to trade finance and shipping deals. The credit index is the economic indicator that our market, the one we're trading, is back to normal, and hopefully this won't be short-lived. Moving to the center of the document, this is where we list the 10 largest investable ETR holdings and the top 10 rated holdings. These two lists show that companies or organizations, these two lists show what companies or organizations owe the exchange the largest amounts of money as of the 31st of April. And as usual, you can see the HSE remains and all but constant, along with Tradius, and the continued presence of Nestle, Tarmac, and Balfour Beatty, with CBRE remaining for its fifth month in a row. Moving to the top 10 rated investable ETR on the right-hand side, there's the regular appearance of Transport Supplies, Paramount 21, and others. These are the highest rated debtors, and apart from Nestle, as none of these were investment grade or had an investment grade rating on the 31st of April, this list shows a random selection of organizations, regardless of the amount of their liability, and is simply a selection of the most creditworthy. The pie chart below these two sets of lists continues to move back to its typically well-diversified spread of ETR across the market. Health and community continues to hover between 16 in February and 19 in April. Wholesale retail held steady at 26.79%, as did food and beverage at circa 7% and manufacturing at 9%. Construction gained 2 points in March and now another 3 points in April, coming in at 19.64%. As I mentioned before, a significant factor here is the mining and aggregates trade we support for projects in the UK like the High Speed 2 or HS2, that's the rail link from Birmingham to London. Whether strategically planned or not, an infrastructure project and any others like it will go a long way to easing any recession in England. And actually, Andrew or Ruby, would you please create a ticket for that? Do a little research on what EU countries have already approved, if not started, infrastructure projects, please, so we can include this in next month's briefing.
Yep, no problem.
Yep, good man. So this pie chart continues to reference the EU NACE categorization system until the credit classification that's part of our new credit machine takes over later this year. Looking at the performance section of the briefing document, you'll see a continuing pattern in the trades. You'll see a continuing pattern in the trade for April 2021 versus 2022 April, where, as mentioned above, volumes were down, but values continued to be up. The briefing shows that volumes are down some 16.21%, but the values were up 50% when you compare April 2022 to 2021, meaning we traded 31.5 million in 2021. And as you can see, we traded almost 48.0 million to the end of April 2022. I've already mentioned the credit index of 73. And to finish on our performance in April, the largest single trade was a trade finance deal of just under 2 million. This was another mining trade with aggregates being provided for one of the U.K. infrastructure projects mentioned earlier, where our originator required funding at this level to complete the delivery of raw aggregate materials to the HS2 project. As explained in the investment brochure and also at other briefings, the average value of an ETR is 2,000 euro, but we have traded ETR where the value has been less than EUR 1. And as you can see here, the largest one last month was roughly 2 million even. Finally, let's move to the trend section of the April briefing, where you can see that the investor's yield or buy price started at 2.127 and ended flat at 2.129. As you know, on May 1st, we took away the trade desk synthetic 3% yield support. So next month, we'll see what the impact, if there was impact, what that impact was. As always, and to remind you, with the negative yield of circa 1% on bank deposits, the investors are still getting a yield that's between 3.3% and 3.5% better by buying investable exchange traded receivables than by letting their cash language unattended in the bank. And again, the rate changes daily and can be checked on the investable website, investable.com website. To finish this briefing, you'll see a repeat of the active RSA or revolving sale agreement of euro 70.47 million. And that completes the, or concludes rather, the briefing for April 2022. Thank you.